This is Great FM.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another conversation in the Great FM series, the official podcast series from Great HR. You've got me, Ahalya, on this podcast. Now, you know, for all of you keen newsies, and also for those of you who don't live for the news, there's really no escape from what we're going to be talking about today. That is the code on wages. So the labor codes, which has been in talks for a while now, features four new codes. And after much debate, is looking at seriously being implemented a year after suggestion. So in today's conversation, we're going to be talking about two of the four codes in particular, code on wages and code on social security. Now, of course, all the conversations on Great FM eventually boil down to one thing, which is HR. And these two codes, along with the entire labor code, are bound to have a serious impact on the world of business and industry in general. So by default, it's now a serious priority for HR professionals everywhere in the country. If you're a bit lost, don't worry, so am I, which is why we've got Mr. Anurag Jain, co-founder and partner of By the Book Consulting LLP, a consulting firm that offers customized solutions to individuals or organizations in the areas of taxes, social security, and more. So the perfect person for us to be talking to today about this. Hi, Anurag. Thank you so much for joining us on Great FM. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Ahalya, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. We really need your expertise to sort of, you know, take us through what we're dealing with in terms of the labor codes and more specifically, code on wages and code on social security. And, you know, before we go any further, I do want to tell our listeners, this is a very, very in-depth topic, a lot of nuances to it that we really need to understand if we're going to navigate it properly, which is why this conversation is going to be a two-part conversation. So let's dive into part one, Anurag. What do you say?
Let's go.
Perfect. So, you know, to start with, why don't we look at the labor codes from up top, maybe a more macro view? What are some of the key highlights of the new suggested codes and which ones should be of particular interest to HR professionals in the country, in your opinion?
Yeah, very interesting question, Ahalya, because if we are looking at things and because labor codes is such a wide topic, mm-hmm. that the government itself had to subsume the legislation into four labor codes. We are talking about the central labor law legislation being consolidated into four labor codes, and these are 29 central labor legislation. Mm-hmm. So if we talk about the key highlights, I would rather bucket the entire labor codes into six categories. So to start with, yes, labor codes is primarily a consolidation of 29 existing central labor legislation. So okay. Now it has been subsumed into four labor codes, which is code on wages, code on social security, there's a code on industrial relations, and the code on occupancy, health and safety. So the basic purpose of this consolidation is because most of these central labor legislation were dating back to the pre-independence era, and most of these legislation are no longer relevant or keeping up with the current times wherein we have different category of employees. Mm-hmm. We have startups, we have unorganized sector as well. So in order to cater to these employees and to provide a uniform social security regime to them, to provide or enable the organizations to carry on their business in a very seamless manner, these new labor codes have come into picture. If we talk about the second highlight, of course, beside the consolidation, the second important aspect is around uniformity of definition.
Okay.
If we look at the current scenario, every legislation has their own definitions, and sometimes these definitions differ from one legislation to another. Mm-hmm. As a result of which organizations always have difficulty in interpreting what are these definitions all about, and this again leads to a very time consuming exercise and sometimes litigation as well. So uniformity in definition is a big second sort of like key features of these labor codes. The third important aspect is on account of use of technology. Likewise, mm-hmm. what we are seeing in the income tax legislation, the government is laying a lot of emphasis on use of technology. Even the assessments or the scrutinies are happening using technology tools. So similarly, labor codes also want to emphasize on the use of technology. If rather than having all those physical visits where an organization used to get a visit by the inspectors or by the relevant officer, a lot of focus is on picking up a random e-inspection where an organization would be required to submit their documents on an electronic portal. All the documents will need to be uploaded instead of carrying all those hard copy of documents.
Okay.
The fourth important aspect is around the accountability and transparency. Because of the use of technology, again, the focus will be on transparent setup, wherein the labor officials will be having all those conversations with the relevant people in the organizations, having all those documents on a e-portal, which will be, again, might be available for public records, might not be. But again, the emphasis on, first and foremost, the accountability part, wherein even the government officials will be accountable to the various actions that they're taking. But at the same time, the organizations will also be accountable for their compliances as prescribed in the new labor code. The fifth important point is around effective enforcement. Now, they have used, keeping in view the global business practices, they have came out with the concept of the inspector come facilitator. And what typically happens is, right now, an inspector is a person who comes and visits your organizations, asks for some documents, inspects it, and then issues his observation report. But now the role will be multidimensional, wherein the inspector can also act as a consultative capacity. So basically, what it means, an organization faces certain issues of the compliances around the timelines, around the interpretation of the law. Now they can easily approach the such inspectors. The inspectors can provide them consultation. Sometimes they can provide them some relaxation of the compliance as well. So all in all, it's a very participative process that the government is trying to encourage for the organization. And last important point is around ease of implementation. So the primary focus of the labor codes is to ensure that organizations can carry on their business in a very seamless manner. And so with the four labor codes, it would be much easier for the government officials to implement it as well as ensure the compliance by the different organizations.
Right. Okay. I think you've presented us with quite a few nuances, and I think maybe the first two are quite important in terms of understanding its business and industry impact as well. Because one, when it comes to uniformity of definition, I think that's something like you said, there is a lot of diversity usually in the way these things are approached. So I'm sure maybe these labor codes are going to play an important role in that.
Right. Right. And in fact, what would be interesting for the HR professionals, mm-hmm. would be in terms of understanding what will be the financial or the non-financial impact on account of these uniformity of definitions.
Okay, all right. And, actually speaking of, so now you've given us an up-top view of the entire labor code, but like I said in the beginning, we are focusing on the code on wages and the code on social security today. So why don't you take us through the key highlights of those new proposed codes as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. So we can start with the code on wages, and we talk about code on wages. Some of the key highlights of a code on wages are that, first and foremost, a concept of national floor wages has been introduced, and this is primarily done to reduce or remove regional disparity in minimum wages. Now, a national floor wages will be applicable, and the states will have the power to basically prescribe their own set of minimum wages, which cannot at any point of time be lower than the national floor wages. Again, this is all done keeping in view what are the best practices being done across different geographies as well.
Okay.
The second important highlight is around the determination of the minimum wages. Right now, the minimum wages is basically prescribed based on employment times. In fact, under the present legislation, there are more than 1,000 minimum wages which has been prescribed by the both the central government as well as the state government. Now, the focus of the minimum wages will be basically based on the skill sets of that relevant person. It can be high-skilled person, low-skilled, medium-skilled, unskilled. So there will be different segregation of the skill sets. It will depend on the geography or the region. So it can be metro cities, non-metro cities. It can be towns which are located in backward region. And it will also be dependent on the arduousness of the work. So let's suppose there is a person who is working underground, who is working in a mine. So their minimum wages will be something a tad bit different as compared to a normal person who is working for a normal job. Another important aspect is each of these minimum wages will be reviewed in every 5 years to take into account the inflation aspect as well. Third important thing is the payment of wages provision is applicable to all employees. So right now, under the present legislation, the payment of wages was applicable to people who were earning the wages of around 24,000. Now that limit has completely been removed. payment of wages provisions will be applicable to all the employees. This is to ensure that the organization does a timely payment of wages, that whatever deductions they are doing from the wages or the timely settlement of wages, all is being done or aligned with the new legislation.
Okay, so just to be clear before we move ahead, with the code on wages, there are now standardized classifications in terms of defining what the wages for someone is going to be, depending on their skill sets, their geographies, etc. So every legislation has to now comply to the standard set of classifications, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And another important piece is around it, there will be a uniform definition of wages. What it means is, as I was telling you earlier, that under the present legislation, the wages is something which is a very contentious topic because each legislation prescribes a different definition of wages. And why wages becomes important is because if a company is paying any retirement benefits, if the company is providing any benefits, normally the base factor is around the definition of the wages only. And that's why we are seeing that in the past as well as the present scenario, companies grapple with this entire interpretation of the definition of wages.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of which, there are different interpretation, there are different judicial rulings, and so the increased exposure on account of the litigation increases for the organization. With a uniform definition of wages, this entire anomaly, or I would rather say this entire litigious topic might come into end.
Interesting.
This is Great FM.
But, you know, actually, Anurag, that's something that I wanted to talk about, because while there are, like you said, some pros to this entire thing being implemented, it has taken a year for it to be, one, taken seriously, and two, for it to actually come into, you know, action as soon as possible. There was quite a bit of backlash, and everyone did say that, you know, once the opinions come in, there will be scope for change still. But what, according to you, are the pros and cons of each of these codes?
See, whenever a new legislation comes, there's bound to be debates, there's bound to be different viewpoints.
Right.
So I would say, rather than coming out with the pros and cons, there are certain gray areas which the government should address and clarify.
Okay.
What I would say, if we talk about some of the important areas which we are seeing that various industries bodies are basically representing before the government, various companies or various industries are also telling the government that they need to take this into account or provide some sort of like clarity around it.
Correct.
What I can think about right now are five main points, which are sort of like gray areas, for which personally, for me being a consultant, these are the areas for which government should provide some level of clarity or some sort of like by way of some sort of FAQs as well. So to start with, the first and the foremost thing that comes to my mind is what will be the treatment of something as simple as variable bonus, or sometimes companies make one-time payments like notice pay, or sometimes they give a loyalty bonus. So what shall be the treatment of a variable bonus if we are talking about the definition of the term like wages? Now,
right.
Presently, based on the literal interpretation of the definition of the wages, it appears that this component per se should form part of wages. However, because variable bonus at the start of a particular fiscal year, normally organizations don't know what will be the bonus that they were going to be paying to their employees, because all that depends upon how the organization has performed, how the respective employee has performed. And that's why we call it as a variable bonus. So if at the start of the organization is not at all clear about what will be the variable bonus, how will they factor this particular component into the wages, which will form the basis of your contributions like a provident fund, or overtime pay, or gratuity, or leave encashment.
Right.
So this is
one
important component for which various suggestions and recommendations have gone from different trade and industry forums. And it remains to be seen whether the government is going to make any changes in the definition of wages, or they're going to bring some sort of like rationalization around this entire definition. Second important aspect is, if you look closely at the definition of wages, they have said that a portion of components which is being paid on a non-monetary basis, like any benefit or perquisite which is being provided to the employees, a portion of that will also form part of wages. Now, if we talk about non-monetary benefits, how will a company value those non-benefits or sort of like non-monetary benefits for the employees? Right now, if we look at income tax legislation, there is a specific rules which lays down the valuation mechanism for such non-monetary perks. But under the new labor codes, as of now, those evaluation criteria has not been defined. So it remains to be seen whether the government is going to come out with some sort of like valuation criteria for these particular component. I can give you a very simple example of like we know there are companies which issues employee stock options for their employees. Now, wherever company allots such options and wherever there is exercise of such options by the employees, normally there is a tax impact, and then there are specified valuation criteria under the income tax legislation for valuation of such benefits. Now, how the valuation mechanism will work in the labor code regime is something that remains to be seen. So this was one very close example that we can talk about the perquisite valuation rules. The third important thing or the gray area is around the gratuity. Now, gratuity is one retirement component which can impact the financials of the organization due to the implementation of new definition of wages. At present, there is no grandfathering clause in the Code on Social Security, which means that in case an employee who has rendered a service of 15 years or so retires or resigns, then he will be entitled to gratuity based on the new definition of wages. Now, this will of course be subject to the overall limit of INR 20 lakhs in case the organization has put on that overall cap. But what will typically happen is a person who has rendered a service of 15 years or so, and wherever organization have not put that statutory cap, then there's going to be a very, very huge impact on such organization to pay such gratuity benefits. Various industry forums and various chamber of commerce have also made a representation to the government to rethink about this, to introduce some sort of grandfathering clause which ensures at least the interest of the organizations as well as the interest of the employee remain intact. And there is no adverse cash outflow for the organizations. The fourth important area of concern is around settlement timeline. If we look at the labor codes and the particularly code on wages, they have prescribed a 2-day settlement timeline for full and final settlement, even in the case of a voluntary resignation. So wherever a person resigns from the organization, the code on wages expects an organization to make a full and final settlement within a period of 2 days. Now we know a general business practices normally it takes an organization 30 to 45 days to make a full and final settlement because of all the respective clearances that we need to get from HR, payroll, legal, or whatever the standard operating procedure the organizations might be having. Now, with this 2-day timeline, it would be very difficult for organizations to cater to this. This criteria, and that's why many organizations are suggesting to government to reconsider this, to give a timeline which is more practical for the company to implement.
Okay, all right,
and
understood.
the last important point or the gray area is some sort of like clarity needs to be provided on overtime wages. The current legislation or even the new labor codes prescribes the payment of overtime wages wherever companies or the employees rather work overtime basis. Under the present legislation, the focus was on employees who are normally blue-collared workers to make them payment of overtime. But if you look at the new legislation, clarity needs to be brought from the government side whether the overtime payment requirement will be applicable for white-collared employees or not. So that is one area that again requires a clarification from the government side.
Okay, all right. So definitely some work still needs to be done. And I think that's why a lot of organizations have also been asking for like a 2 to 3 month grace period where they can look at how they're going to implement the new labor codes, right, within their organizational structure. And I guess that brings me to the last point and a good segue for our conversation in part two. But right now, I think I want to end today's conversation with this. What are your thoughts on the actual implementation of these codes? Do they need to follow, a strict timeline? It doesn't seem like it can be one size fits all.
Yeah, so when all the four labor codes have received presidential assent way back in 2020. In fact, Code on Wages was the first code which received presidential assent way back in 2019. And the other three codes got the presidential assent in 2020. Now, currently, a notification is awaited which will specify the effective date of implementation. But you have to keep in mind that labor is a concrete topic and it requires both center and state government to frame the respective laws and rules. So, while Parliament cleared the labor codes in 2020 and the center has also pre-published the draft rules, some state governments are yet to complete the process. If we look at the current state, at least 31 states and union territories have pre-published the draft rule for the code on wages, while 26 states have done it for the industrial relations codes, 25 states have pre-published draft rules for the code on social security, and 24 states have done for the Occupational Safety, Health and Working Condition Code. If you look at the recent media reports, it appears that there might be a staggered implementation of labor codes with an initial rollout of two codes, which should be or which could be code on wages and code on social security.
Okay.
It remains to be seen how the government will follow on this approach. And so what organization and what everybody is keenly awaiting is what will be the effective date which will be announced by the government. It may be this fiscal year or it might be shifted to the next fiscal year.
Okay, all right. That's a lot of interesting information for us to ponder on. And of course, like I said, this is going to be a two-part conversation because while today we've got an overview of the labor code and the four different codes that come within that, and you know, to understand better what exactly these codes entail, we definitely do need to see at the end of the day how HR professionals have to now gear themselves or reorient themselves towards the proper and effective implementation of these codes. So that's going to be the chunk of our conversation in part two. Anurag, thank you so much for being here. And of course, we'll continue in just a bit. Everyone stay tuned. Make sure to check out part two and we'll be back soon.
This is Great FM.